Well, it's predictable from an Aboriginal perspective, and what it really represents is a kind of a 19th century think tank. I think having a white paper is a good thing to do, but I think that it's not expansive or inclusive enough in terms of understanding the North in its contemporary setting, particularly in regards to the demographic of the traditional owner community right across Northern Australia, in terms of our land ownership holding and interests, also in terms of the concerns that we've had, and in terms of all of the previous past failed government policies that have come before us. It doesn't offer anything new in terms of a reconstruction of that paradigm to the extent that we're going to be front and centre of this discussion.
And can you explain to us why you think Indigenous people should be front and centre of the discussion?
Well, we own directly 40% of the land assets, and probably indirectly, probably most of the other 60%. We're kind of, you know, spread over 1,000 discrete communities right across from Cairns to the Territory, top end up here, and also across the Kimberleys. We occupy that space. But also, you know, what the paper doesn't do is acknowledge nor embrace the values that we espouse and the values that are here as part of the growth and development as contemplated in the white paper. And that's an asset in itself. And I think, we anticipate the extractive kind of resource industries in terms of mining, and but also now, of course, a major focus in agriculture because of the whole question of supply of protein to the world. But, you know, the reality is, if you don't get the fundamentals right, if you don't get the structure, because there is really no protocol in terms of the engagement between Aboriginal interests across Northern Australia and what's being contemplated in relation to the NAIF funding. I think also, you know, there is no representation on the NAIF board. I think that's something that should be rectified.
Mm. And for our listeners, I'll just explain, when you say NAIF, that's the Northern Australia Infrastructure Facility that's in charge of handing out this $5 billion loan scheme for developing the North. We actually heard from its chair this morning, who said that the criteria for funding includes an Indigenous engagement strategy. If you're a company, you need an Indigenous engagement strategy. What's your thoughts on that?
Yes, that's correct. It's the fund set up to facilitate the investment, and the investment is in obviously in major infrastructure, ports and airports and roads, all that sort of stuff. But very little of that has been designated in terms of building the social infrastructure in the Aboriginal community. I think we've got to be very careful about the nature of this and what this engagement methodology actually means. It's a bit like consultation, I think. That it's becoming, there's a fairly cynical view out there in the community that it's really an excuse to do nothing, much at all. We haven't got the methodology right, but the only people who can do that really are the Aboriginal people themselves. So I think it's slightly flawed. I think we're in a new, completely new environment. It should be, you know, business can't be achieved by doing business the same way it used to be done. This has to be a new paradigm. You know, what we're talking about trying to juxtapose, is the question of maintaining the integrity of the oldest living culture, continuous living culture on Earth, with the need to be able to bring that culture into the modern world in an economic sense, so that people can maintain their independence, but also, you know, contribute.
You mentioned this morning that the white paper focuses too much on mining and irrigated agriculture. What would you like to see it focus more on?
Well, you know, you anticipate that they are going to be part of the package, but I would think that, you know, there's a thing, the cultural conservation economy, people in terms of environmental services, I mean, the whole kind of carbon offset programs where the methodologies have been now developed and been accepted by the national regulator. There's, you know, we've just had a presentation here today by Jeremy Russell Spitt, one of the chief scientists who's been involved in developing that methodology, with his kind of data and predictions that there's a substantial amount of offset tonnage levels that could raise millions of dollars to remote communities. And so what we need is the infrastructure on the ground to be able to enable people to be able to meet their compliance requirements under any future contracts through the ERF. You know,
a focus on industries that already have high participation rates in the Indigenous community.
High participation rates and great potential in terms of its business case in respect to the kind of returns that you would be anticipating in a competitive environment and in a much more creative and more sophisticated community and investor kind of world. People are looking forward to social these social investment programs, but also in terms of adding value to their own current business in terms of the offset program. I mean, I think You know, we're not, we heard about China. I mean, China's leading the world in renewables, you know. We don't hear much about it, but we know they are. And there's no reason why there can't be a connect in terms of the work that we do here on the ground as traditional owners with investment that might come from places like China as well.
This idea of inclusion that you talk about, if we could take an example like expanding the water irrigation scheme into the Northern Territory. For the last couple of years, we've been told that native title negotiations are the hurdle. Why are they a hurdle?
Well, I suspect it's because all the red tape that you have to go through, and I think it's one of the key problems that that Aboriginal people have. I think the whole question of the lack of definition of character of what the native title as a tenure is, and I think that the starting point is people perceive it as a risk and a problem. I think that's probably why. And the reality is not of Aboriginal people's making. They have to deal with the same complications of regulation. I think there has to be some freeing up of that. I think there has to be discussions about the land tenure reform. There are discussions happening about, you know, how do native title become more fungible or bankable, you know, how do Aboriginal people leverage that native title within the kind of within the business and commercial setting. First of all, but there's got to be security and protection of their cultural and customary interests, and then there has to be that capability to be able to engage competitively in the broader open marketplace.
And get things done quickly? Is that a priority?
Well, yes, I think, but part of the problem of getting things done quickly, Matt, is that you need to invest in the governance capacity. You need to invest in the kind of growth capacity of the communities to be, develop the level of competency and efficiency in their management so they can actually start to, you know, produce a lot more coming out of these negotiations. We're still living in a very underinvested, very poor kind of social and governance infrastructure that really hinders. So there's a significant risk. There's a significant risk that in the negotiations, for as fast as you want it to be, the end is you're going to lose out because if people feel they've been done a raw deal, it ain't going to work.
So I guess to wrap it up for you moving forward, what would you like to see happen when governments talk about developing the North?
Well, I think there's got to be a negotiated protocol about the engagement relationship between government and industry and Aboriginal communities. I think there's got to be co-investment happening at the same time, either freeing up some of the NAIF monies, and even if it's on the same concessional basis that they're currently offering in terms of the major infrastructure projects. I think that we've got to be able to simultaneously invest in the capacity of the communities to do things. You know, roads in Aboriginal communities, housing is still a major issue, health issues and all the normal kind of things we see every day in the media about the disadvantage and dysfunctional environment that have been caused by inadequate and inappropriate government policies. Those are the things that have got to change. We need to reform the policy. We need to push the refresh and reconstruct button in relation to those policies. Have Aboriginal people in the room, in the tent, dealing with these things, and then they're not an afterthought, you know. They're not just the people who are receiving it. They should be the ones developing it in partnership with government and with industry. And that's the way, you know, we really need to go.
Yeah, well, one of your big quotes today was, there's no point having a big major project in the North and severe disadvantage on the fringe.
Well, that's exactly right. I mean, all you're really doing in that situation, that environment, is you're just making more trouble for yourself and just compounding the problems there already.
Thanks for your time.
No worries, Matt. Thanks.